Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 53, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have returning guest, one long-awaited returning guest.
Amy. I always do that, don't I?
Yeah, Amy from?
Amy from Burbank, California.
Marcia from Los Angeles.
And Allison, also from Los Angeles.
Woohoo! All right, that was lackluster. Woohoo! Woo! Woo! All right, in the news this week, all of us who have been waiting and super sci-fi geeks, Doctor Who has a premiere date of April 23rd, and it will be simulcast, sort of.
Same day cast. Still 8-hour difference.
That's fine, between the U.S. and the U.K., so we get it on the same day, so no extraordinary means need be necessary.
So I get a present on my brother's birthday.
Yes, and knowing your family, that's pretty good, I like that.
Other news we have is that Michael Chiklis is doing a pilot for CBS, just in case No Ordinary Family is canceled.
What I love is that he actually said it that way, but Julie Benz is still ever hopeful and every day tweets, you know, please let people, let ABC know that you watch the show. Please, please, please. She lives in denial, but it's a lovely land, I understand.
Well, I mean, I think she's used to living in Buffy and Angel land where, you know, the fans get behind you and support you. But I don't think No Ordinary Family has that fan base.
So. Yeah, that's not going to happen this time.
Yeah.
I don't think they have fans.
Well, I tried to watch the show. I couldn't, as those who listen to the podcast are aware. So
I gave up on it a long time ago.
It does not look good in the ratings. The ratings are going down every week. So anyway, the next thing is they're doing a pilot, a musical pilot or a musical or whatever called Hallelujah. And some very interesting people are cast in it. Mainly Terry O'Quinn from Lost.
Ooh.
I did not know he could sing, so I'm interested.
Wow.
And also Donald Logue from Terriers. Both of them were cast this week in that pilot.
Very cool.
So, hey, that's a new show I get to watch. Well, hopefully, if it gets past the pilot stage, that is.
What did you say?
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
The first show I want to talk about is the pilot of a show called Breakout Kings, which is on A&E. And I don't believe anybody else in the podcast has seen it, but I just wanted to put it out there that I watched the pilot this weekend, and it comes on Sundays. It was really pretty good. I mean, it's not like an A-plus pilot, but I'd say it's a B-plus, A-minus, in that the characters were interesting, and they did something very surprising. And the premise of the show, really quick, is that the FBI, I believe, are basically hire convicts who have already broken out of prison and have been recaptured. And they hire them to help them capture other fugitives who escape. Thinking that you think like a criminal who's escaped, what would you do when you first get out of prison kind of deal.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there a show like this? And I don't mean Leverage. Wasn't there another show just like this maybe 5 years ago?
Are you thinking White Collar?
No. 5 years ago. No, there was a show, maybe even a little older, where they took criminals out of jails and told them that they would, you know, cut their time and do all this for as much as they do.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is for each criminal that they help capture, they cut a month of their sentence off. And they're put in minimum security prison so they don't have to worry about, you know, all the other criminals doing stuff to them or whatever. So, but basically, they get a couple of days out to go chase down a criminal. And what's interesting is the personalities of the criminals they have. One guy is really, really smart. He's like a super geek. He looks like a geek. He doesn't look like a criminal at all. But, and then the other, there's a woman who's a con artist. And so she basically lies all the time. But she's got her own motive. And then you have the just like kind of the super thief. The guy just knows everything about crime or whatever. And then you have the two FBI agents, one of them who's super by the book and one of them who is the opposite of that. What I like about it is the casting. One of the guys is from The Wire. The woman is from The Unit. I loved her in The Unit. And the geeky guy is from something and I can't think of what he's from. But what I liked in the pilot is that they started off with four criminals. And the first guy decided to hide a knife under his sleeve at a restaurant or whatever. He was like, oh, it's just for my protection. And that was it. They were just like, you're going back to prison. So you think this guy is part of the cast, and nope, he's gone within the first 15 minutes. So I like that. And next week, they're adding someone else to replace him. So I'm interested in that. I like the chemistry between the characters. They all have their own different motivations and different things that they want to do. And the psycho, the geeky guy likes to psychoanalyze everyone. So that's all. It has an interesting mix of characters. So I think it's worth a gander if you have the time. So it's on Sundays, Annie. Done. All right. Next show we're actually going to discuss as a group is the episode of House this week. We haven't talked about House in a couple weeks, but this episode was so exceptional. Like, it was the first thing I thought about talking
about.
That
was very good.
So, hit me, guys. What'd you think?
I thought it was excellent. I thought it was really unique and genuinely excellent episode. I loved the dream sequences, and I thought they did a great job with that.
Which one was your favorite?
Well, for me, the musical was the best one. I mean, I loved them all. They all had, each one was great, but I just loved the way they had that sinister Bob Fosse thing going with the musical. I mean, it reminded me of All That Jazz, and had, you know, that which did not end well. So it definitely, you know, had a tension going with it. But I thought they did that great. And I loved how they staged it, and everything was terrific.
You could tell the difference between House's dreams and her dreams. Her dreams were movies. This dream was All That Jazz. And then she had Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. So she's trying to fit everything in with her dreams being the movies and escapism, but then the reality hits at the end, and it's always death at the end. Whereas House is trying to figure out how to be the hero. But his version of hero is like zombies. You know,
that was great.
Or you know, somebody, you know, that he has to rescue. So while she's dying at the end of her movies, he's trying to rescue. And I love the zombies. I love that Kane. I love how he was able to take his dream and morph it and actually make his weapons happen and really control it up until the end. But that was
cool. Interesting in her dreams, she was not just dying. In one of her dreams, she was already dead.
Right.
In the very first one, the sitcom, she was dreaming of herself already in the past tense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was her dream, and it wasn't a movie. It was
the television
sitcom.
It was a sitcom.
Yeah, in fact, two of hers were sitcoms. Actually, she had a Father Knows Best one, which was interesting.
That was weird.
But she woke up from that one. That one she realized wasn't right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but it was the other one that, yeah.
Yeah, it was really fun to see the sitcom, to see them in a sitcom fashion.
Right.
Like to see it filmed in a different manner and with the fake laugh track and everything. I could really see House as a sort of twisted sitcom character.
Yes, a twisted father. What was good about the whole episode is Hugh Laurie is pretty much confined to a small area of acting by being House, and the man is extremely talented. And episode, he got to sing, he got to dance, he got to do all these other different characters. He got to do comedy. He got to do like everything. And I was like, this is their Emmy submission episode. You can tell
yes,
already. And also, I mean, aside from everything you guys have said about each one, because the musical, I thought, was visually stunning. I was blown away by just the visuals of the reds and the colors and the sweeping stage and all that stuff.
And I thought it was very haunting.
Yeah, it was just like, all of it was really good, but then you get to the end and it just broke my heart. You know? I mean, I knew that they weren't going to make it. Like, I knew it.
It was kind of leading up in that direction. I had the feeling that this was not going anywhere good.
Right. And I mean, I knew the moment that they got together that they weren't going to stay together. I knew that.
Because good writing has to have some negativity, something that pulls you in. If you're too happy watching the show, why watch the show? That's why soap operas are the way they are.
Well, I understand that, but It just, even though I knew it was happening, it was still that moment where he realizes what's happening, mm-hmm. and he just is like, just saying no. Like, he won't even let her talk.
Yeah.
You know?
That but, I mean, he's the architect of his own misery,
right.
is what is the most tragic part of all this.
If he had just stepped up and been the hero like he had in his visions and in his dreams, everything mm-hmm. would have been fine.
Yeah.
I think that at the beginning she knew. This was all her subconscious telling her what was wrong. She knew from the beginning of the relationship that it wasn't going to be permanent. She really didn't trust House with the kid. That and even though he did great with the kid, he still did it on a scam. Like, she doesn't know what he did about the school, teaching the kid all the things to know to get into the school, and a lot of different things. But her subconscious kind of thought about it and kind of knew.
Well, the
That's
fact
why that,
that
sitcom talked about stealing but don't get caught next time.
Well, the other thing is, she's writing out her will, and she's putting her sister on it and not even considering House, even though she's with him right then.
Because she knows that she, in her heart, she cannot have him responsible for the child.
Yeah.
That's right. Because she can't trust him.
Right.
Right.
Comes right down to it.
Yeah. Right. And so anyway, it's heartbreaking, and next week's episode looks like he's going to jump off a building, which I'm pretty sure is not actually going to happen.
No.
But it's just going to be emotional ringer time
and,
next week.
And, but the nail in the coffin was they would have gotten around it, was the kids seeing him taking the Vicodin.
No.
And he called it candy. Yes.
Is that what we're...
Yes.
That's how she knew, yeah.
That's
yeah.
how she knew, because the kid called it his candy, which means it was more than one time.
That's
he
true.
He says it was only once.
That's true. Yeah, because he's an addict and he lies.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on from Depressing House, but it was a very good episode.
Yeah.
A brilliant episode, yeah.
Next up is Stargate Universe comes back after its long hiatus for the last 10 episodes before it is axed. Well, it actually is axed already. So the last 10 episodes and the premiere. What'd you guys think?
Go ahead.
I don't watch the show, so you can't look at me.
Go ahead.
I thought it was, you know, it was like Caprica all over again, just shoving into our faces, you know, what we're going to be missing. I thought it was an excellent episode. I thought it was terrific and had everything going for it and showing us, you know, why this should not have been canceled. it was great. It had all this terrific action and, you know, brought more of the characterizations to the characters and, you know, more depth and answered more questions and got more into the mythos of this particular Stargate universe. I mean, it just gave us more of what we wanted to see and showed us more of the direction of where this Stargate was going to go, which was fantastic. And it just kills me that this is getting the axe, that, you know, this is all we're going to get. It was fantastic, and it was terrible at the same time, because this is it.
I was
frustrating.
I was a little disappointed in the fact that I didn't get enough Rush. Like,
I could say that about every episode, because I love him.
It was just that, for me, Stargate Universe has become Rush and Young, the Russ and Young show. Like, if the two of them are not going head-to-head doing something, then I'm not happy. But this episode, I mean, it was a bigger scope, more stuff was going on, it was about more people, and, it finally resolved the whole issue with Chloe, because something needed to happen with that.
Yes.
And so that finally got resolved, though I actually have to say it was a little anticlimactic how that happened. Mm-hmm. At least right now, it's like, oh, she's fixed, okay.
I mean, I would have preferred her to just turn full alien.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I thought that was a little anticlimactic. But the whole resolution with the alien showing up, and I like the fact that, what is his name? The guy that's second in command of Young now is, I like his return to the show. I like
Blue Diamond Phillips plays him.
Oh,
thank you. I like his return to the show. I like him being second in command. I like how him and Young work together now. It really works for me, and I hope he doesn't like fall out of an airlock or anything anytime soon. So thumbs up for Stargate Universe. Looking forward to the last 10 episodes. Do you have any comments?
No, I didn't watch that one.
Oh,
this week
you should watch it.
Okay,
all right,
we're watching.
All right, another show that came back this week is The Event. They had a two-hour premiere, I guess, or not even a premiere, because it's just a return. And so I have to say, even though I enjoyed all the revelations that they had, because mm-hmm. they had quite a few, and you now have two camps, very distinct camps.
Yes.
And it looks like it's going to be Civil War, which is really going to be kind of interesting. And only thing I didn't quite understand was at the very end when the woman was in the helicopter, why did she jump out of the helicopter? Like, I didn't understand that.
I think because she was trying to protect the guy who she told to run. The name of his character I'm blanking on right now.
He's but like Zelko, the Secretary of Defense.
Zelko Ivanek plays him.
Yes, Secretary of Defense or something like that.
Yeah, Secretary of Defense. She was trying to protect him, and she did. She provided cover, but this is the last thing she did. But that was why she jumped out of the helicopter.
I have to say, his plan, Thomas, is not that bright. He really isn't,
not
and
at
I don't
all.
I don't understand how he is the leader of this outfit. And
pretty much, I think because you know he's Mama's boy. That's how he ended up in control. Yeah. And I think that's really it.
Yeah, because he does not have a lot of brains. I like that the other soldiers are like, "Are you sure that's a good idea? That sounds like a really bad idea." And he goes, "Do what I say." And then of course everything goes wrong. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed that the Secretary of Defense guy gets all that torture and he doesn't give up the information. And the guy who's not being tortured totally talks. I was like, "Are you kidding me? If this dude can withstand the torture and not talk, then you can sit there and shut the heck up."
Seriously, he's a soldier. Isn't he trained better than that?
Obviously not. That's why he's on guard duty in freaking Alaska. So he's fired.
He got the crap job for a reason.
If I was the Secretary of Defense and I was like, I just got tortured for 15 minutes, you did nothing and gave up secrets, you're demoted. But
I hate hearing all that whining. I hate seeing blood. I'll give you the codes. I can't stand it.
I was like, they didn't even do anything to him. They didn't shoot out his kneecaps, nothing. I was like, whatever, man. But the main thing was the daughter, the whole Jason Ritter storyline.
Dad.
I have to say though, okay. All the angsting and whining about, oh my God, you're my girlfriend, all that stuff, whatever, I don't care. But I have to say that the dad coming back and putting his foot down with Sophia and was like, you want my help to find your son, then you find my daughters. And I was like, yes, that's what
yeah,
I'm talking about.
Okay.
So I liked him standing up.
I like that.
Yeah, I liked him standing up to Sophia. And I liked that when, you know, he got his daughters back and he's like, look, you can come with me and I'll tell you about how you're not human and I'll tell you what it means, or you can stay with your boyfriend, who is your fiance. He was like, I understand. He was like, I'm not going to be mad at you either way, but you have the choice to make. And I felt bad for her, you know, the choice she had to make and everything, but I'm not sure how I felt about Jason Ritter taking that decision out of her hands and just leaving. But I guess she just kind of seemed so weak. She's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And I'm hoping that it means one of them are at least out of the storyline. I don't have to watch them anymore. Because I really didn't like them together.
I can't stand watching them. I usually fast forward through their, you know, bits. Because they just bore me and annoy me so much.
I thought that was just me.
I mean, if he's gone forever, it's like, yay, so much. Because I just can't stand them.
Except that I saw him in the preview for next week.
Oh, God. I just, they're so annoying and so dull.
Well, I'm hoping that separately they're tolerable. How
God,
about that?
They couldn't be worse than together. I mean, just, all they do is whine.
Yeah.
They just whine. And,
well, and the preview.
But I mean, this episode had to have been definitely the best episode that they've had so far. They certainly packed more into this one two-parter than they have into the entire series that came before it. What I'm worried about is that it's too little too late to save this show. Because really, I mean, it up until this point, it moved so slowly and had so little happening. I mean, really, they told you more about what's going on in this one two-part episode than they did at any other time. And had more action going on in this one bit than they had going on.
Yet, we don't know what the event is.
Well, you know, but you can take some sort of an educated guess because they've been showing you this big array in the desert and saying, oh, well, we're going to bring all these people through and, you know, they're going to be...
Except that the aliens already know what the event is. They're like, it already happened for them. So they already know what it is. So them bringing their people through the array is not the event.
So yeah, they're time travelers too?
Well, that's the thing is we don't know, but that's a guess.
Huh.
Like, I don't know. They could be. But they already know what the event is, and they're refusing to tell, and I think it's because they're time travelers and they don't want to change the future. That's
or
personally.
The writers are afraid that once they tell us what the event is, we won't be interested anymore.
Well, there's that too, but the problem is now they've held on to it so long, it's like nobody cares. Anyway, yeah. Let's move on. The next show I want to talk about really quickly, in that I actually don't want to talk about it, is... Chicago Code. Only thing I wanted to say about that is we're not going to talk about Chicago Code on the podcast anymore until it gets better.
I haven't even seen it.
Well, I saw the pilot.
That's your threat to Chicago Code.
Yes.
Be warned, Chicago Code.
Well, my thing is the pilot promised an ongoing serialized storyline about the corruption in Chicago. We're following these corrupt politicians and these cops that are going to take them down. And that was interesting, you know? Though I have to say that the episode before last week was halfway interesting when the hit came down on the councilman with the 15-year-old kid trying to put a hit on him. Well, no, he was doing the hit. That was actually pretty cool because we got inside his head this time. Because normally all the voiceovers are the cops or whatever. This time was almost the whole episode was his voiceover talking about his childhood and flashbacks to his life, and I almost thought he was a good guy for like 5 minutes.
Well, to keep this under 2 minutes, this past week when they talked about how the unofficial mayor of Chinatown ended up getting his position because of this councilman who now is taking the other councilman's assistant and putting him in his place and grooming him. And so they are trying to go back a little bit into the corruption. The problem is it's not dark enough. And I'm afraid that Fox is doing to them the same thing they've done to every other show. Make a whole bunch of standalones with a little bit of arc, but don't get into the arc. Just do a bunch of standalones, because after all, that's the only way you'll get fans. And I think they're losing more and more fans every
week. Right, because they're almost doing, like, I guess what we were complaining that the event was doing, which is you're promising us this big story and this big revelation, and then you're not delivering. So every week I tune in to see, okay, because I got the snitch in place who's supposed to give us information, whatever. You know, you've got all this other stuff going on, and you're watching for that. And I'm like, why are we caring about a murder that happened in the river? Is it connected to the councilman? Not at all.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what I was watching was the bomb. The guy was sitting off the bombs throughout the city that had nothing to do with the overall storyline.
No, they're trying to push that down, which I don't like.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see. You know, let's keep it to the little time we talked about, and we'll see how next week's go. But, yeah, not as much fun as the other shows.
Boo. All right. Next up, we want to talk about Glee. This week had Gwyneth Paltrow, and before, I know we're in a heavily negative Glee group, before we get into that, all I want to say is I really enjoyed the song selection this week. I like the songs, and I actually like it when Schuster performs, because usually, I've noticed in the last several episodes, he really hasn't done any songs or done any song and dance or whatever, and I thoroughly enjoy when he does songs, so I was happy about that. I did think the Chastity group was hilarious.
Afternoon Delight. I want you to know that I'm sitting there, because I remember March 1976. I remember this song. I remember everything about that song and what went on in that time of my life. And I'm sitting there going, this is not a Chastity song.
But that was the hilarious thing.
What is
I mean,
stuff
you know,
in the back?
It's a dessert.
That's what I'm thinking. Why are they flashing
the
stuff in the back?
They wore, I swear to God, I was dying.
It was 1976 all over again. But I'm just thinking, am I missing something? Did they, That I laughed out loud, and I rewound it, and I watched it again.
That was so great. He's like a nooner. He's like a, what did she say a nooner was?
It's a song about slipping out for a quick nooner.
Nooner.
Yeah, and then she goes, no, but she goes.
That's right, it's a dessert.
Yeah, and she thought that nooner meant something else. Everybody's looking at her like, that's not what a nooner is. She goes,
the look on Artie's face was the most priceless thing I've ever seen in my life. It was great. It was just this absolute look of stunned, just, I thought you couldn't believe what was going on.
I had that same face.
No, well, the best thing also, other than her misinterpretation of nooner, was Brittany talking about why. No, she's like, I think I'm pregnant. Don't tell anyone. And within 5 seconds, like, everyone knew. And then,
well,
everyone,
she didn't choose the word pregnant though.
Yes, she
said, I thought she said a bun in the oven.
That, yes, well, yeah, same. Well, well, whatever.
And I knew from the way she phrased it that she didn't know what she was talking about.
Yeah. So it was great that within 5 seconds later, Artie, people were like patting him on the shoulder, congratulations, and he's like, what? And so then they're all in class, everybody's depressed, and the teacher asks, like, what makes you think you're pregnant? And she's like, well, I saw a stork building a nest outside my house, and I was like, what? And as bad as Brittany is, I have to say I was a little stunned. Like, I was like, okay.
She really believed that the stork brings a baby.
Yeah. Okay. That was new. And I did feel like the episode was aimed at teenagers and their issues about whether you talk about, you know, sex issues or whether they talk about them in school, you talk about them among yourselves. Though I have to give them points that they had the same discussion with
Kurt.
Kurt. Thank you. I was like, Kyle? That's not right. With Kurt and his dad.
And Blaine trying to also talk to him and him not wanting to hear.
I thought that was really good because that is awkward. Parents talking about to their kids about sex is awkward to begin with. And then you add in the whole, I don't know anything about gay sex on top of it, and I have to now try to explain it to you. You know, so all of that was I thought was handled really well. I love Kurt's dad. I absolutely love him.
He's so supportive. He looks like the type of guy that you don't think would be so supportive.
Which is why it works.
Yeah.
So those are all the positives. All right, you guys go.
I think some of the hairlines are getting a little recedy.
Who are you referring to?
The one who thought he had gotten the girl pregnant, but he really didn't.
Artie?
No, the tall one.
Mohawk. No, Quinn.
The one who
Finn,
thank you.
Ooh, I think we'll go through the whole cast in a minute.
I think Finn's hairline's getting a little receding. I don't know. If I was a teenager watching this show, I'd look at him and go, wow, are they like 26, 27, 28 already?
And that's about right. I mean, but a lot of shows cast like that. Yeah, so it's not surprising.
Including Grease, this movie.
Oh, absolutely. That was horrible. in those days, we knew it was horrible.
But you still enjoyed it as a teenager, so that's the point, so that's fine.
I think that Glee, when I was watching this episode, I'm thinking, oh great, this is one of those special episodes. And so there were times that I thought it was really stupid and really hurt, and it just wasn't good. But I loved Kurt and Blaine talking and how Kurt just doesn't want to talk. And Blaine as a friend is trying and he just won't talk about it. And then the dad issue, like you mentioned, I really like that. And I adored the Afternoon Delight. I'm sorry. I just thought that was just so off the wall. I loved it. I had no idea there was a dessert by that name.
Allison, your thoughts?
Well, anytime you get into a message episode, you're going to have cringeworthy moments. And this was certainly it. I mean, the Afternoon Delight was a deliberately cringeworthy moment. So I actually liked that. But I, you know, there were other moments that were just, you know, heavy-handed or missed the mark, or, you know, and also shoehorning Gwyneth Paltrow. As much as I like her, she, you know, they put her into scenes where we've got to give Gwyneth Paltrow a song, and so having her do a song where, you know, it's supposed to be a song for Brittany and oh God, I'm blanking on
Artie?
Santana.
Santana, thank you.
Oh, I have to say.
It's supposed to be a song that Santana wants to sing for Brittany, and instead, it's being sung virtually entirely by Gwyneth Paltrow, and they're doing backup. And it was kind of ridiculous.
I have to say about that relationship, I was actually moved.
Well, Santana, but it's, yes. And that's great, and I loved that being done, because it was it explained a lot about Santana's attitude and why she's so bitchy all the time. And right. I loved the last scene between them when they were talking by the lockers. But it really should have been a song that Santana was singing. And instead it was given to Gwyneth Paltrow, and I just thought, you know, did they really have to give that to her just so she could sing a song? Couldn't they have done that differently?
I see your point, but I totally forgot about that. Yeah, the Santana and Britney thing, I actually think that that's going to go in a place that I want to see where that's going. Yeah. I care about that now.
I mean, she's come out that she's not sure what she is, but she knows she's got feelings for both boys and girls, but really, really strong.
Well, I see Britney as actually going exactly both ways. She likes boys and girls, but Santana clearly...
I don't think Santana does. I think Santana was with boys because that was expected of her.
Exactly. I think she really does just like girls.
And she said that she went with boys to then go and make their lives hell.
Yeah. She clearly loves Britney.
Yeah. All right. I wanted
to bring something up that I saw on one of the entertainment shows. I don't know if you heard about how Chris Colfer got the part and all that.
Who?
Chris Colfer. Wait. That's Kurt. The name Kurt.
Oh, sorry. Oh,
okay. Yeah. Well, he auditioned for what's the name of the kid in the wheelchair?
Artie.
Yeah, sorry. He auditioned for Artie originally. And his audition was so good that, well, they didn't want to cast him as Artie, but they still wanted to cast him, so they wrote the part of Kurt for him.
I did hear that.
Yeah, and he actually played Kurt in Sound of Music, different character, but on stage.
All right, we need to move on.
Okay.
To the, sorry, we were just over time.
Oh, no problem.
Next thing up is V for Victory. This week's episode I thought was really good. We have basically, I think Erica is like unraveling. She is the weight of the office and her failed. One thing that struck me, I was like, well, your plans might not fail if you don't come up with them and try to execute them in an hour. Like, literally, they'll come up with a plan and be like, okay, we have to do it tonight. I was like, well, why don't you come up with a plan that maybe takes a couple of weeks to plan? You know, and the last couple plans they come up with all require everything to happen within a day or two. And then it fails, and you're like, why did it fail? You didn't plan it very well? So anyway, so right now she's all stuck on the fact that her plans keep failing and she's freaking out. But I still think that it's interesting. What's his name? The guy, it's Joshua. I like that Joshua got his memory back. That was fantastic.
All in one instant, like that.
Yeah, it was just like, boom.
Magic.
Well, that's true. It was like magic.
It was lucky magic.
Good timing, too.
It was very conveniently timed.
Very good, very well-timed magic, yes. But I'm okay with that because I like Joshua being a good guy versus being a bad guy.
Well, he was a boring bad guy. That was the thing. Yeah, he's much more interesting as a good guy.
And I like the fact that, what's her name, the daughter?
Lisa.
I like that Lisa confronted her grandmother and realized, you're not really on our side, you know? She's like, you're just trying to get your power back. And she confronted her about it, and I was like, nice. You know, all the pieces are coming into place, and everybody the storyline is just really coming together, and I'm really excited. And unfortunately, we only have one more episode.
I could see a real opportunity for Anna to just crack. Just go nuts.
Oh, and she really likes the girl, too. She's like, Mommy, I love you. And she's like, aw.
And she's like, oh, no, I have to feel love now. I have to feel emotion.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Oh, that's really good.
I like the blood coming out of her eyes.
Oh, yeah, when she tried to do the bliss. That's the thing. I don't know why she thinks that blissing the entire planet is a viable option if she bleeds through her eyes by blissing one human.
I was thinking that. She was probably thinking, I'll work on that part later.
I was like, that's not a very good plan. I was like, do you know how many humans there are?
She must have perfected it somewhat, because the second time she bled less, and she didn't cause Tyler to scream like a maniac.
That's true. But, and you're right.
Plus, Tyler is very amenable to control. Yeah. So.
Yes, he's not the he is not the mind that's going to resist.
Exactly.
And hopefully he'll be blissed out and we won't see him on screen anymore. That would be
one
nice.
One can hope.
Well, I would feel bad for Erica then, because that's her son.
And... yeah.
As she'll get over it.
Yeah, whatever.
I know I will.
I know. Oh, and the preview for next week looks great. Mark Singer.
Oh, yeah.
I am excited. Except that also is the last episode, and the ratings are not great. So
it may be the very last episode, yes.
Oh, I would really like to see how it develops.
Yeah, I mean, the storyline is really good now. I mean, I thought in the beginning that it was okay, but it has gotten so good that it's going to be one of those heartbreakers on me again.
Yeah, the ratings aren't looking too wonderful, though.
No,
so.
Well, that's the thing about TV, folks. Fall in love with a show, and then they yank it out from under you.
Yes, I tried to go with the philosophy of only watching shows that had made it into the second season, and it didn't work very well. But anyway, all right. Sigh. Next up, we're going to talk about Justified.
Justified, my love. Every time I hear that name, I think that song, and... I see Raylan and oh, I'm sorry. I just wasted, 10 seconds drooling. I'm sorry.
All right, well, tell us what you thought then. Let's do discussion.
I love it. What I love is the language. They talk like it's a Joss episode or someone who's worked for him. I mean, it's all language.
They're very particular.
Oh, it's fantastic. And I love poor Boyd. Who, you know, he's trying to go straight, and he goes in with the bad guys, figures out what they're going to do, stops them from what they're going to do, saves the life of the employee who's actually, Bobby Singer, and he does all the good that he should do. And
well,
he
intentioned to do wrong.
He intentioned to do wrong, but
I
then
he... Be, a word.
Yes. But that's the thing about watching the show, the words that they come up with. But at the end, he still did right, because when he found out they were going to murder the
well, yeah, he said his policy.
Says,
yeah, his policy is like, I don't kill people.
Anymore.
Anymore. And he also realized that they were going to kill him, which is why I was just like, I remember last week I was thinking, dude, the only reason they need you for this plan is to be the fall guy. And I think he realized that because they had everything planned, like... He was like, you know, why do you need me? If you have all the bomb, you got everything inside, man. I was like, dude, the only thing they're missing is a fall guy, mm-hmm. and that's you. And he figured that out, which I was pretty sure he would, because even though he kind of talks slow and he's kind of country and everybody kind of thinks he's dumb, I was like, he's not dumb.
No, he and Raylan were friends from childhood. They have some interesting stories, little pieces that we find out. Like, they were in a mine that there was some problem in, and that Raylan cannot go into a mine because he's still afraid of them.
Right.
Yet it turned Boyd on. I mean, there's some amazing stories. The family, the Bennett clan.
Oh.
There's some stories to that.
Yeah, I want to know what's going on, because there's some Raylan, there's some Gibbons versus
the Bennett
family conflict going on. We don't know what the conflict is, but I'm sure by the end of the season we're going to find out.
Well, the conflict is old from childhood.
But we don't know what it is.
No, we don't.
I've just started watching this show. So, which one is Jeremy Davies? You know, the guy from Lost.
Oh.
He's Faraday.
He's one of the Bennets. He's the son. She has three. The woman, she has three sons. Yeah. He's the one that's a cripple. He's the one that's got the leg.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I have a couple of moments in the show I want to mention.
Go ahead.
Okay. The ones that really stick in my mind, and I'm sure you'll know why, is because, getting tased in the nuts. That's something you don't forget.
That's awesome.
And also...
mutual tasing as you guys are falling on top of each other.
Yeah. And then when she smashed
her
son's fingers, that was a real cringeworthy moment.
Well, the thing that trips me out about that is that because they're criminals, based on their actions, she should have killed them. You know? They did something really, really stupid. And it brought the law down on them, and they all might go to jail because those guys are idiots.
But they're her children.
Therefore, since she can't kill them, Her alternative is serious corporal punishment, which involves beating her son with a hammer.
Well, she didn't beat him. She smashed his fingers. And then that's, he still came and held and went
like,
his
head
in
you,
her lap.
He's like, I love you, Mama.
Yes.
I was like, oh my God. Talk about Stockholm or whatever kind
yeah.
of shit. It's whatever that. But I mean, to think that after he gets his hand smashed with a hammer and he wants to hug her, lets you know what their childhood was like.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so even though the Bennets were criminals and Harlan's family was criminals, you don't see Harlan being brought up where he was beat
Raylan.
Like that. Raylan, excuse me, but he was beat like that. It just you know that there was still love there.
I don't know about his father. Did not love him.
No, actually, his father does in a very bass-ackwards way. Yes, but I don't think he was beaten. So it's interesting to see how two criminal families raise their children.
Well, also, the woman's in charge of his father. Like, his father does not control the household.
Well, that's not his mother.
Oh, I know. But you can see that he is not in control of that household.
Absolutely, and he wasn't out of control of the household the first time.
Right, so
absolutely.
I don't see... He's not the wife-beating your kids kind of guy.
No.
He's too weak for that, but he's still not a good father.
Mm-hmm. But Raylan, I'm still waiting to see, because normally when he takes out his gun, he aims and he does well. This time he missed.
Who did
he shot him in the leg.
Who did he shoot in the leg? I forgot.
The guy that he tased in the nuts.
Oh, well, he said because he was tased. Remember? You don't count that. He was like, he was trying to shoot him and he was tased, so he was shaking.
Don't tase my nuts, bro.
Well, anyway, for anyone who's listening who has not started to watch Justified, it is a prime show. It's fantastic. You've got to make the time to do it.
Yes.
You were talking about the language of it before.
Mm-hmm.
I like it when Southern characters don't use contractions in their words. The guy they attacked, he says, "I will not," when they tell him not to do something. It reminded me of Bill on True Blood.
it's real language. It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we are going to talk about Big Bang and giggling occurs. Go ahead. Tell us why you're giggling.
Well, you know, I've complained a few too many times about how Sheldon's the middle. You know, he's the one that everything is around, and I'm bored with Sheldon, and could somebody just put him in a closet for a little while? This was actually cool. This was, let's screw with Sheldon's head as best as we humanly possibly can.
With the magic trick.
Oh, and the thing is, I'm watching the magic trick the first time I'm watching the show, and I'm going, how's he doing that? I'm not seeing the hands, you know, with all the change and all this. And then when you realize, when you watch at the end, when Raj, you see the card Raj has picked, the camera moves behind him ever so slightly, and you see it's a king. And then he says, it's a three of whatever. And he goes, yes, it's wonderful. At that moment, I went, oh my God, they're all in on this. This is great. This is wonderful. I actually watched the episode twice. I thought that was just, oh, I loved it. And on the other side, Priya is a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
And the idea that Leonard's going to keep her around.
Well, okay. She is and she isn't. She does have a valid point in that.
But that's an insecurity she should not have.
Some people are insecure. That doesn't make them evil, that they're insecure. I understand her point in theory. I don't know if she said it quite properly, because it would be different if Penny was only his friend. But Penny is all of their friends. So she shows up at the house to hang out with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So Leonard can't be like, you can't come to my apartment. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So that's the part that's kind of illogical about her argument. But I do understand her saying, she's your ex-girlfriend, I'm uncomfortable, and, you know, with you guys hanging out all the time. That's a valid statement. And especially when Penny shows up on their date, like, that's a little weird. And Penny was trying to sabotage that. She really was. So Priya is a little bit in the wrong, but I don't think she's entirely in the wrong.
Not entirely, but I that is the thing. She wants her completely out of the life.
I don't think that's feasible.
That's not feasible.
Well, they're next door neighbors.
Absolutely.
That would require somebody to move, which is why Leonard was like, don't you feel like moving somewhere? Like, I was like, no. And, you know, I think the only thing that I thought Priya was wrong with is she's trying to change Leonard. I think that's actually a bigger issue than the whole, I don't want you around Penny. Her getting him a new wardrobe, insisting that he wears contacts, which obviously the contacts don't work right for him. I think that, and she's not listening to him.
No.
I think that's a bigger issue.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's, and I know what that's like. A woman who tries to fix a guy is never happy even after she fixes him.
Right.
Because now she doesn't like him because he is fixed.
Well, because now he's not what she went in first, but whatever.
Yeah.
But the comedy of the episode, I thought, was valid. I thought that this was one of the... watching Sheldon try to recreate the card trick and using... No, what was great is he, like, stole the satellite for the NSA that was supposed to be monitoring missiles. And he was using that to look at the cards. And somebody was... He was like, aren't those used for defense? And he was like, we're not at war right now. And I was like, oh, my God.
And he goes on Craigslist to look for uranium.
Oh, and then the Homeland Security, he's like, apparently if you hack into this and you try to find uranium, Homeland Security tells your mother. And I was like, I think they do more than that, but okay.
But
all that was great.
It was. And but one other thing that kind of went under the radar, I didn't catch it completely the first time, is when Priya and Leonard are starting to make out in the bedroom, and she's already seen that he has two Star Trek uniforms, dress and every day.
Right.
And he says, you know, would it be pushing it, you know, if you, I got you a Uhura outfit? And she very calmly says that Raj has one in his closet, and it's been affecting the family in a negative way. Between that and him wearing the Wonder Woman costume for Halloween, I'm just like, ooh, now this is going to be an interesting storyline down the line.
Well, I've already given my idea of his orientation, so it's not that big of a surprise. All right, next up, I want to talk about Fringe.
I thought it was a fantastic episode, and, you know, it starts out kind of looking like it's going to be another one of those sort of filler one-off things, you know, kind of monster of the week kind of things. And then it just plays right into the arc all over again, which I thought was great. And I thought it gave a lot again for Walter to do, which always is a good episode. Walter episode is always a good episode.
I thought Walter was insane with his soul magnets theory.
Oh,
I was like, he's lost his mind.
And the looks from Nina. So, Walter, no. It was terrific. It was from beginning to end, and oh my God, that end, that just came.
Well, before we go to the end, really quickly, the episode itself with the whole blending elements, and so all of a sudden, people who are paraplegics can now float.
Mm-hmm.
Was crazy.
Yeah,
and
as Walter was saying, it defied the laws of physics to take these things that were supposed to be ultra-heavy elements and make people lighter than air
yeah.
as a result. And the thing that was interesting about it was that he said the only reason that it was working was because what he had done was breaking down the universes. It was breaking down the laws of physics.
And I also thought what was interesting was the sun comes to visit him in the prison, and he was like, oh, I did this to help you. And he's like, you thought I needed to be fixed? Like, that
yeah.
was, I thought, was a really just kind of unexpected emotional moment. Like, I didn't see that coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was pretty good. But then, of course, the end. Go ahead. You go first.
Well, that was just brilliant because they go through the whole episode, you know, with Walter going on about the soul magnets and how William Bell had theorized that with the use of these that it could bring a person back from the dead, that it could bring his consciousness back
into a vessel.
If it could find a vessel to bring the consciousness back, that you can't destroy energy, it could bring it back.
Right.
And Nina just thinks he's crazy. And then he goes and he finds this bell that's been sitting behind her desk this whole time, and he rings it. And he's sitting there waiting, and he goes, no. And she says, no, Walter, it's still me.
Well, what's great is, what's good foreshadowing or whatever, is William Bell used that bell in season 1, in the finale, to send Dunham to the other universe. He hit the bell, and then she went foosh into the other universe. So he's already kind of knows how to train.
That there's something more to it. And so, Walter says, "Well, now we just wait. There's been a message sent, so now we wait." And they look toward the doors, and nothing happens. And the next scene that we see is Olivia and Peter, and we go to his lab at a high school where he's been constructing all this data together to see, you know, what's happening with, you know, the device that he's supposed to be a part of. And he's trying to construct what all of this is about, and he still hasn't put it all together. And as he's talking to her, and she looks into this mirrored board, and all of a sudden you hear this sound, and as she's looking into her reflection, she doesn't quite hear him as he's just talking, and she turns to him, and I'm forgetting now the line that she says.
I don't know, but her voice was all weird.
But she turns to him, and she her voice is not her voice.
Right. And she's doing a interesting.
She says something like you know.
He said she like, said something is it's like you can't find it because it's in my office.
Yeah, that's right. You know,
and then he's like, it's in the FBI building?
And the voice that she says it in sounds like Leonard Nimoy's.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant. And it's obviously she's channeling William Bell.
Right.
And it was just absolutely fantastic. And the way she did it was brilliant because the second she says it, you know that's who she's supposed to be.
Well, what's great is, one, I thought that was the creepiest thing ever. I was like, that is so freaking creepy. The other thing is, I find it ironic considering how badly I talked about Anna Torv and her acting. And this season, they have her being two Olivias in different universes and doing such a good job that I could immediately tell which Olivia she is.
Mm-hmm.
And now she has to be William. She has to be William Bell for at least one episode. And I'm like, wow, did she just decide she wanted an Emmy this year? Like, what the heck? So,
well, I think that's the thing. She used to get slammed horribly in the first year for being a terrible actress. And now, like you said, she's playing like three different characters. You know, she's got Olivia, she's got faux Olivia, and now she's playing Leonard Nimoy. And I think that, you know, she's kind of giving lie to the whole, you know, wooden actress thing. I think
I'm impressed.
Actually, give her the material, she can rise to it.
Yes, I am impressed. I'm surprised, but impressed. Because I immediately knew what she was doing, and I immediately was freaked out. And if she hadn't pulled that off right, it would have just been like, I would have just been laughing at her.
Mm-hmm. But she did. I mean, she had one sentence, and instantly you knew what she was doing.
Right. So, thumbs up. Yay, Fringe. Clearly. And the ratings for Fringe are good, so I'm happy. So hopefully
this is very good. Yeah. I am so hopeful it's going to be renewed because if any show deserves it, Fringe does.
This season has been all A's. And I really think that they need, based on where the storyline is going, they need one more season to finish, to wrap this all up, and we'll be good. I just need one more.
I live in hope.
All right. The next show we want to talk about is Being Human UK, and unfortunately, I forgot. I was looking at my TiVo, and I was like, okay, I've watched everything I need to watch this week, and went, oh, crap.
But I watched Being Human US, for anybody who watches that. Does anybody watch that? Crickets. There are things I want to say about it.
You can go ahead, say.
Okay, well, I thought it was really interesting how they took a scene from the first episode of Being Human UK and put it into this episode, which I'm not sure which number episode this was now, but we're getting a little later on, more developed in the season. It's the scene where, he's Josh in the U.S. version, George in the U.K. version.
Just pick a universe and go with those names.
Okay, I'll just say Josh since I'm talking about Being Human U.S.
All right.
It's the scene where he runs out of time. To turn into a werewolf in the basement of the hospital, so he has to go home and do it in the house.
And he rips the house apart.
Yeah, but they also kept the part where Sally sees him, asks to stay behind, and please can I watch you change? And they did that exactly the same. They did it very well. So I was pretty pleased with that, and it's just interesting to contrast and compare. I'm not very far along in the UK one yet. I plan to, since I hear it's fantabulous. But I'm enjoying it.
Okay. Allison, UK version, episode 4.
Okay, do you want to leave the room so you won't
be spoiled? Has anybody else seen it?
No, at this point, just forget it. I'm like,
being human is more like candy. It doesn't matter where in the show at this time that you hunt.
That's not true. Season 3 is actually very much art.
Season 3 is extremely intense.
Yeah, it's totally different.
Extremely intense.
But I was going to say, just give a really quick impression. I know that it's my fault that I didn't watch the episode, so if you spoil me, you spoil me. But since you're talking to yourself, don't really monologue too much. But you know what I mean.
Okay, well, this episode is called The Pack. And it introduces a brand new werewolf character, played by Robson Green from Wire in the Blood.
He was in the first episode of this season.
That's right. They did briefly introduce him.
Right.
He and his son. And they get a lot more into his character. His character and his son's character. And there's a lot going on with him and with George and Nina, as George and Nina try to get more information on whether anybody knows anything about, a werewolf baby, and if anyone has actually delivered a werewolf baby before.
Oh, that's right, because that was last week they decided to keep the baby.
Yeah, exactly. And she's terrified now. Has this actually happened in the past? Is it successful? Can it be brought successfully to term? And she's really, really worried at this point because they've never heard of anything like this. Well, so they want to know if somebody knows anything like this.
Well, especially because they conceived the baby while they were werewolves.
Mm-hmm, right. And they know nothing about this. So George, he remembers meeting this guy in the woods. So they try to seek them out. And they try to get information from them, and McNair, who Robson Green plays, is really not forthcoming with any information, and he doesn't want his son talking to them, and he tries to just keep them away and not discuss anything with them, and they're set upon by vampires, and they're wounded, and they end up having to go back to the apartment.
Well, what I was going to say, remember I was saying don't monologue? You don't have to give point by point.
No, I'm not going to give point by point, but they end up meeting up with Mitchell, who wants nothing to do with them, and they want nothing to do with Mitchell. And there's a lot of stuff that does, I'm not going to go into a point by point thing, but a lot of things happen in this, and a lot of angst goes on, and they reintroduce the vampire couple that we saw with
the creepy people. Oh,
the creepy people, they come back and we learn a lot more about them that we didn't know before, which gets a lot uglier.
Yeah.
And it's, like I said, there's a lot of stuff that happens in this episode, and we find out a lot more about vampire politics, which is not pretty. And it's a wonderful and very dark episode.
Well, that's the thing the thing I love about this season has been how dark it's been. It's been amazing.
And this is an amazing episode, and I highly recommend it.
I'll be watching it today. I just totally forgot this week. I don't know why. It's mainly because it wasn't on my TiVo, so I did not remember. All right, that's all we have time for this week. Remember, if you have any feedback, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, and we're on Facebook. And we're also going to come out with a special white collar edition of TV Campfire. It should also be out this week. I got to interview them at the Paley, and we'll be putting together those interviews along with a discussion of the finale. All right. Talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
See you next time.
Bye.